Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And the countdown is on, ladies and gentlemen. We are three episodes away, technically two, after this one drops, from episode 100. I gotta cook up some good things for it, but it is scheduled to be going down as the prediction show for UFC 303, which is currently housing Conor McGregor versus Michael Chandler. However, that fight is in dilemma. Apparently, it might not be going down. Ariel Helwani recently reported that he thinks they're going to find a new main event and co-main event. I have no idea what's going on. We're going to briefly touch on that in our new UFC news, as we haven't really spoken in a week or so. So it's been a while since we've gone over a lot of fights. We're going to point out some of the big stuff, especially today, June 13th. A lot of stuff has gone down today. So we're going to be mentioning all that on today's episode. And we got a lot to talk about, guys. We got a lot to talk about. We're going to get all caught up with the NBA Finals and the Stanley Cup Finals. Going to be talking about Clash of the Castle predictions, as of course WWE PLE going down in Scotland should be interesting. And we're going to be doing our Louisville recap, talking about the Louisville card, my trip to Chicago, as well as, of course, discussing film, and we'll be capping it off with our UFC Vegas 93 predictions. I'm excited to go over all this. Let's not waste any time, because trust me, we do not have a lot of time. Or I guess we do. Technically, we have unlimited time, but I'll tell you what I did not have unlimited time on, and that was my trip to Chicago. Of course, if anyone knows, my family, and my entire family besides me, my parents, they all live in Chicago. My cousins, my grandparents, my uncles and aunts, they all live in Chicago, Illinois. And recently, one of my good buddies, Jaden Watson, who we've had on the podcast twice before, he's actually doing an internship down there. So, you know, my dad, he was doing some training in Chicago with work. He's like, hey, you can drive down with me. You'll fly back Sunday night. And I got to go down and actually experience downtown Chicago. And it was a fun trip overall after work. I actually got out early last Friday, which is always nice, getting out early on work on a Friday. I mean, who could ask for more on a Friday? Fridays are just so nice when you get off early from work. And, you know, we hit the road, drove about 3 hours, and we settled down in Toma, Wisconsin. And let me just tell you something about Toma, Wisconsin. I feel sorry for anyone who's from Toma. If I have any Toma, Wisconsin fans, I'm sorry you live in that town, because it's just so mediocre. I mean, we went to a bar, not even a bar, it's like a bar restaurant, if you will. It's just a place to eat called Tap House 20, and, you know, okay food, okay service. There wasn't really a lively scene. I could tell there's a lot of people who grew up there and stayed there their entire lives until they got old. So that was kind of boring, you know, the town of Toma, but the hotel was super nice. A Holiday Suite Express. I mean, super nice. I had a hot tub all to myself. I love my hot tubs at hotels. I mean, it's always so nice. I mean, one day in my future home, I am definitely getting a hot tub or jacuzzi. But definitely that was one of the more fun parts. And then honestly, didn't sleep too bad at the Hotel Express. And in suites, you get a thumbs up. And then we hit the road Saturday, and I was off to Chicago. And I arrived, and me and Jaden got right after it. Okay, we head down to Navy Pier, which is so much fun. So much fun. Navy Pier, right on Lake Michigan. I mean, so much to do. There's great bars down there. The people watching is absolutely crazy. You see some goofy folks down there, let me tell you that. Also, the scenery, just absolutely beautiful scenery. Good weather. And we walked on these stairs. This is weird to describe, but the stairs, they were made like this very soft wood. It felt like we were floating as we were walking up them. It's hard to explain. I would need to really visualize it with everyone watching this. I also got to experience Chicago traffic. It took us an hour and a half to get downtown Chicago. It was not fun. Let me tell you that. It was not fun at all. But, you know, it was a good time. I'm actually posting on my Instagram tomorrow, or when you listen to this episode, should already be out, about some of the good pictures I got there. And I had a rainbow goat, which was like a... It was a pina colada, a strawberry daiquiri, and some other blue slushy type drink all packed together. And it was so tasty. It was so delicious. After that, we head out to dinner to watch some UFC and some NHL. Had some good drinks. Had some good, what did I have? I think I had some appetizers, some wings or something. Pretty good. And we watched UFC Louisville. And it was a fun card. Some highs, some lows. We'll, of course, be talking all about that on today's episode. We went 6-8 on predictions. So not the best. 4-2 on the main card. 4-2 on the main card, though. I'll hold at that. And my cousin Parker and his buddy Josh were coming from a White Sox game, actually swung by where we were eating, and we all talked and hung out for like 2 hours, and it was just great. It was really just great. Great conversations, cool hearing about things. Parker has recently become a cop. His buddy Josh actually works at hospital, and the stories they got is they got some fun stories. I'm actually I'd have them on sometime if I'm ever down in Chicago. And Jaden, I mean, one of the more interesting stories he told me is that a worker actually died on his job site. No, not his job site, but one of the job sites that he works for. He's doing a construction management internship, and some guy was up 9 stories working on scaffolding. The scaffolding gave away, and he plummeted to his death. And I just heard that, and I was like, that is insane. That is just unfortunate to hear, and it was kind of just jaw-dropping. Like, wow, someplace where you're going to be working, some guy passed away. That is crazy. Headed back from dinner, I mean, it's just some restaurant right across from where he lives. He actually is staying in a long stay hotel, you know, which isn't too bad. It's an okay hotel. Oh my gosh, before that, I went and visited my grandpa Tom, legend of the family. He's living in this old folks home, and I heard old folks home, I'm like, oh great. And I found out it costs $5,000 to $6,000 a month to live there. It's essentially a 5-star hotel. It was one of the nicest places I've been. I was a little jealous. His room was all new furniture, great space. They give you breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I mean, they have game rooms. They have a patio up top where you can rent out for party rooms. Just absolutely amazing. I was like, I want to live here when I'm older, except it costs $60,000 to $70,000 a year to live there, which, hey. If you got the money, go and do it. So it was really nice to see him. After me and Jane got back from the fights, I mean, that was at like midnight, we went over to this parking garage right across from his, his room, or his hotel, as I was saying. And we were up top there just alone in an empty parking garage, just looking out over the city. And it was just, you know, people say the vibes were good. The vibes were just good, just looking out, enjoying life. And then we were sprinting. We were sprinting up and down the ramp to see who could run the fastest time. You know, I think I ran the fastest time. Honestly, I think he was a little slow with his stopwatch. Let me tell you, after a couple drinks, I mean, you really get the confidence to sprint up and down a parking garage. Went to sleep. I was able to deal with his cat due to my allergies. Very terrible, but we got up and we were like, hey, you know, Sunday, I mean, we got all day. You know, my flight's not till 6 and I'll be back home, going right to bed and going to work in the morning. So let's make Sunday fun. And, you know, we headed back to downtown Chicago. We head to the Lincoln Park Zoo. And despite being decently big, despite looking nice, Lincoln Park Zoo was a letdown. Okay, I won't lie. I mean, I'm a pretty big zoo guy. I like my zoos. They had a crocodile. Okay, and I was like, okay, a crocodile. Absolutely love it. And it was a tiny crocodile. It was probably as long as my arm. I was like, that's not a real crocodile. That is like a baby alligator or something. Safe to say, I was fairly disappointed. The polar bears looked malnourished. The lions were freaking off exhibit. The biggest exhibit there, the lions, they didn't even have them. A lot of their animals were gone. And I mean, just expensive, just a lot of walking. I was kind of like, you know, not for me. But the scenery down there, great. The people were actually really pleasant. Didn't run into anyone unpleasant. After we were done at the zoo, we head to Angry Octopus. I had some pizza, and it was okay pizza, nice little water I had, and there was a Italian guy sitting right across me. I mean, he acted like an Italian. He had a giant scorpion tattooed on his biceps, huge biceps, clearly came from working on some construction job. I mean, cussing every sentence, talking like this, you know what I'm saying, like, what the F, give me my food over here. I was like, wow, a real Italian Chicago man, interesting to see in the wild, if you know what I mean. After that, we head down by the water. I mean, there's a giant festival going down by this huge pavilion. There's like a blues festival. We were just walking around. We wanted to go to the aquarium. They have a very nice aquarium in Chicago. I went when I was really little, faintly remember it. But it was $41 for non-Chicago residents, or Illinois residents, I mean. And I was just like, that's such a shame. That is such a shame. But we walked around a bunch of places, and eventually it was time for me to head to the airport. And, you know, I like to arrive early. You know, my flight didn't board till 6. We arrived at like 4:30, 4:45, and I headed in, and I'm like, okay, security might take a while. I was flying out of Midway, and I flew through security. I went to my gate. It took me all but 15 minutes, and I found out my flight got delayed until 7:51, which means I had 3 hours to just do whatever I wanted in an airport, which is way more boring than you think, trying to keep yourself preoccupied. And everything was expensive. I definitely spent like $30 on chapstick, water, and some drinks and some fries. Let me see, where did I go? I went to this one little bar there, and I literally just got a summer shandy, which is just one beer, and some fries. $21. $21. My jaw dropped when I got the bill. I was like, no, I'm good. I don't want anything else. And the bartender kept trying to get me to buy shots of Malort. And if no one knows what Malort is, it is one of the most disgusting alcohols that I've ever tasted. I had one shot, I think, two summers ago at my cousin's house, and it tastes like cleaner. It tastes like cleaning fluid, like what you would wash a table with or something. I was absolutely disgusted, but I chose not to get any Malort shots. Bartender was a very odd guy. He was very strict, too. There was some girl waiting for her food, and she sat in the bar area, and he was like, are you 21? And she was like, no, I'm just waiting for my food. He's like, all right, then shoo away. Get out of the bar area. And it's just me alone at this little bar area in an airport. And I'm like, why are you taking your job so serious? Anyways, all the time passed. I think I was on my phone, right in the notebook or whatever. And I got on my flight, and I got a window seat. Good views. Of course, taking off and landing are always some of the most scary experiences that one can imagine while flying. But I was able to survive it. I was able to get through. And my trip to Chicago was a 9.8 out of 10. We don't throw 10 out of 10s here on the podcast too often, so a 9.8 is where it will land. I had an amazing time. Chicago is a very cool city, and we barely even explored an inch of it. I mean, there's so much more to explore, so much more to do. Chicago, you get a thumbs up, double thumbs up from me. Absolutely amazing time. Thank you, Jaden, for having me. I'll have to do that again. I'll tell you something that does not get two thumbs up, and that is the UFC fight news world, as we have gotten some very crazy news today, ladies and gentlemen. Coming up in less than a week, I think it's like 9 days or something, we're supposed to have the number 3 ranked Robert Whittaker in the men's middleweight division taking on the number 10 ranked Khamzat Chimaev in a main event at UFC Saudi Arabia. And unfortunately, Khamzat Chimaev decided to become sickly ill. He's currently in the hospital as we speak. Doctors are tending to him, and he's out of his fight. So Robert Whittaker left without a fight on this massive Saudi Arabia card. Saudis paid a lot of money to get this event. And who is stepping in on short notice? None other than the unranked man who was supposed to fight in the co-main event this upcoming weekend, Ikram Alakhachirov. Ikram Alakhachirov, 15-1. He's 2-0 in the UFC. By the way, those two wins in the UFC are over bums, Phil Haas and Walray Alves. So crazy to think he's jumping from jobbers to a former champion. Ikram Alakhachirov, his one loss in his professional career is to Khamzat Chimaev, so pretty ironic. But we'll see how Ikram does. You know, thanks to him for stepping in on short notice. But man, Robert Whittaker, all his opponents seem to pull out. Obviously, this situation is it's not on Khamzat. He got sick. There's definitely something wrong with him. I'm praying the doctors can get through to him, and hopefully he can return later in this year. But man, that man cannot catch a break. That man cannot get a fight. Absolutely crazy. The more crazy news, though, is UFC 303, because everyone's been wondering, is Conor McGregor versus Michael Chandler going down? I don't know why they're speculating, but apparently at Ariel Helwani, they need a new co-main event. Jamal Hill versus Carlos Ulberg is falling apart, and Conor McGregor versus Michael Chandler might not go down. I have no idea what's transpiring, no idea what's happening, but I do know they are trying to make this happen, ladies and gentlemen, in the men's featherweight division. This is just rumored at the moment. The number 3 ranked Brian Ortega may be taking on one of the hottest new prospects, the number 14th ranked Diego Lopez. I really hope that fight goes down. It's Diego Lopez's shot to jump from the bottom to the top. This kid is so electric. I believe it's either 2 or 3 UFC fights. I think it's 3 straight UFC fights or 4. He's finished his opponent in under 2 minutes. Oh my goodness, he's so electric. So fun. I really hope that goes down, but I also really hope that Conor McGregor versus Michael Chandler does not fall apart, because if it does, episode 100 will need to be switched to something else, because it will be a special not being a Conor McGregor card. In other fight news, though, we've had a couple of ranked matchups announced. UFC Vegas 95 going down August 10th. The number 8th ranked heavyweight Marcin Tybura will be rematching Sergey the Polar Bear Spivak, currently ranked number 9. They fought a while ago. It might have been 2020 or something. Marcin Tybura got the better of him in that exchange, but these two will be going to battle. Both men need a win. The loser will be definitely fighting out of the rankings. Winner will probably get a top 10 guy, so I'll be intrigued to see what transpires there. Also going down, which I do find somewhat fascinating, Calvin Kattar, that's right, the number 9 ranked featherweight Calvin Kattar will be taking on the unranked Kyle the Monster Nelson. He's 4-4 in the UFC, coming off a big round 1 TKO of Bill Algeo. This is a step down for Calvin Kattar. I mean, Calvin Kattar's been fighting former champs, former top 5 guys since 2020. I mean, it's been absolutely crazy. So this is a big pick-me-up fight for him. He's been on kind of a losing streak. I'm hoping Calvin can get back on track. I'll be rooting for him. Trust me, I'll be rooting for him. But a lot of stuff going down in the UFC. I'm a bit worried that fights are just falling apart left and right. I really hope the Conor McGregor fight stays intact. That will actually ruin my June. I mean, I wanted to see Hamzat Chimaev fight so bad. He's not fighting. He's one of the most rare fights. There was a point in 2020 where people were saying Hamzat Chimaev was going to become a triple champ. And since 2020, he fought like four times in 2020 and like a two-month span, and now he has fought once in 2021, once in 2022, once in 2023, and now might not even fight in 2024. So he's slowly falling out of any form of good spot in the UFC. It's absolutely crazy. He's undefeated, all finishes but two fights. I'll be intrigued to see what happens with that fight. But man, a lot of stuff going down in the UFC, a lot of little fights announced here and there. Of course, Dricus du Plessis said that he's just waiting for Israel Adesanya to sign the contract. So who knows? UFC 305, that main event's not even official. Going down in August in Perth, Australia. Adesanya, sign the contract. Fight DDP. You know you're going to lose. You know you're going to lose to DDP, but hey, you got to sign it for the people. And you know what else has been for the people going away from UFC? And that has been the NBA Finals. And for the people, do I mean the masses who wanted the Celtics to lose? No. I mean me, a former Timberwolves fan who was watching the Mavericks absolutely choke versus the Celtics. It's been so satisfying. Celtics are up 3-0 in this series tomorrow, Friday, the 14th. Celtics have a chance to sweep the Mavericks and win their first NBA championship since 2008. Let's just go through the games real quick because, I mean, Mavericks have really not offered any challenge. Game one, Celtics win 107-89. Just an incredible performance from the whole team. I mean, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 guys in double digits. Sam Hauser had 8 points. He was almost in double digits. Chris Porzingis in his return game, 20 points, 6 rebounds. Derek White, 15 points. Drew Holiday, 12 points, 5 assists, 8 rebounds. Al Horford, 10 points, 7 rebounds. Jaylen Brown, 22 points. Jason Tatum, 16 points, 11 rebounds. It is a team effort when you're fighting the Celtics, and they're so deep. They're so deep. It is absolutely impressive. I've been rooting for them. As for the Mavericks in Game 1, Luka had 30, P.J. Washington, 14, Kyrie Irving, 12, and Jaden Hardy off the bench, 13. That was it. The other two starters only had 13 points combined, so kind of embarrassing. I mean, Celtics were up 17 after the first quarter. They were up like 21 at half, and it just got worse and worse from there. Good stuff in game one. Game two went down actually on the plane. I was watching it on the plane. Thank you, Southwest, for having free Wi-Fi on your plane, which I think is pretty neat. When you give me free Wi-Fi. Game two, a bit closer. Celtics win, though, 105-98. Mavericks are actually leading after the first quarter. They then went into halftime down 3 and then got outscored by 7 in the second half, and that was the tale of the tape for them. Mavericks in that game, Luka, 32 points, 11 assists, 11 rebounds. He's good. Okay, Luka Doncic is good. He talks, but he's a good player. Kyrie had 16, Gafford 13, Derek Jones 11, P.J. Washington 17. The stars stepped up, okay? But the bench, 9 total bench points. 9 total bench points. That's not going to do it. As for the Celtics, Jason Tatum, 18 points, 12 assists, 9 rebounds. Jaylen Brown, 21 points. Al Horford, only 5. Drew Holiday, 26 points, 11 rebounds. The point guard doing that. Come on. Derek White, 18 points. Kristaps, 12. And they only had 2 other bench players. I mean, they just absolutely ran them. Celtics, just so, so impressive. And then we got to game 3, which went down the other night. And this was the Mavericks' best chance at winning. And son of a gun, they still couldn't get it done. Celtics win 106-99. I won't lie, though. In the fourth quarter, the Mavericks erased a 21-point deficit in like 8 minutes. It was very impressive to see. But you just couldn't stop them. Celtics went on the road. Tatum drops 31. Jaylen Brown, 30. Derek White, 16. Sam Hauser had 3 threes off the bench. Come on, man. Al Horford, 8. Drew Holiday, 9. It was Tatum and Brown essentially cooking the Mavericks. And don't get me wrong, Kyrie had 35. He showed up at home. Luka, though, 27 points, 6 assists, 6 rebounds. He was complaining the whole game. He fouled out with 4 minutes left. Luka was just being an absolute crybaby. That's a big reason they lost. Also, when Derek Jones and Daniel Gafford combined for 8 points, that'll be an issue. And Josh Green had to come and play 22 minutes. He only hit 1-3. Tim Hardaway, 19 minutes, 0 points. That's going to be some of the reasons the Mavericks are losing here. And they had the same number of field goals. Celtics, though, 8 more three-pointers. There's 21 points right there for you. There's 21 more points for you. Mavericks out-rebound them. More assists, though, to Celtics. Celtics' passing game is unbeaten. It is so impressive. The Mavericks do not have as near as good as court vision as the Celtics do, and it's looking like it's going to be a sweep. Looking like it's going to be a sweep. I don't know if it's going to be a sweep. I mean, you know, this is one of those where I feel like Mavericks might pull out Game 4, lose in Game 5. But, yeah, it's looking like it's going to be the end of the road for Luka Doncic and the Mavericks, which, let me just tell you, that makes me happy. I was so pissed when they lost to the Timberwolves, but the Celtics are getting it done, and it's making me happy. And honestly, Jason Tatum, go get your ring. They were sleeping on him. There was hate stuff about Jason Tatum all year. The Celtics were hated all year. 64-win team. 64-18, and people were sleeping on them, and now they're proving to them that they are by far the best team in the NBA, and another 60-win team is about to win the NBA Finals. Impressive stuff, and I actually have a Celtics jersey on as we speak. I have a Gordon Hayward Celtics jersey, one of the more random jerseys. I have two basketball jerseys, this and a Karl-Anthony Towns, and I personally like the Celtics one more. No offense to Cat. Also, no offense to any of my hockey fans, I haven't watched a lick of the NHL Stanley Cup Finals. Game 3, of course, goes down tonight as we're speaking, as the Edmonton Oilers take on the Florida Panthers, and Florida Panthers are currently up 2-0 over the Edmonton Oilers, number 1 seed and number 5 seed Oilers. Panthers took Game 1 3-0, a little shutout action at home. A goal in the first, goal in the second, and a goal in the third. I mean, Edmonton had no answer. Evan Bouchard had 4 shots on goal. Leon Draisaitl, 4 shots. Their star player, Connor McDavid, 6 shots. No, nothing was falling. Stuart Skinner allowed 2 goals on 17 shots, so a .882 save percentage. One of the final goals was a open net. As for the Panthers, I mean, Alexander Barkov, 2 shots on goal. He had 2 assists. Impressive stuff there. Itu Lustarinen, 1 shot on goal, 1 goal. Tim Reinhart put in 3 shots. Carter Van Hagen got 3 shots. One of them went in. And Evan Rodriguez had 1 shot. He took it and he sank it. Impressive stuff all around, and shout out to Sergei Bobrovsky. 32 shots on goal. He blocked all 32 of them. That's why the Panthers are the number one team in the NHL. Well, you know, I guess now they are. Now they're the number one team. Game 2 went down Monday, June 10th, and this time the Oilers were able to score. They started the game off in the first period. 1-0 heading into the second. Great stuff from the Oilers. I want you to guess who punched it in. Matthias Ekholm punched that one in. Second man, Panthers were able to tie it up, and then in the third, Panthers dropped 3 freaking goals. I mean, come on Edmonton, get it together. Panthers are just running through them. As for the Oilers, I mean, Connor McDavid had 3 shots on goal, was able to get an assist. Vincent Desharnais, 3 shots on goal. I mean, Brett Kulak, 5 shots on goal. Stuart Skinner, 28 shots faced, 3 let in, 25 saves out of that, so a .893 save percentage. But you're just not going to do it when you're taking on Sergei Bobrovsky. They only allowed 19 shots on goal, only allowing 1 in. That's .947 save percentage. Evan Rodriguez had 2 of the 4 goals on 2 shots. Impressive. Aaron Ekblad, 4 shots on goal. One of them went in. And Nico Mikola, 1 shot on goal. He sunk it. Impressive stuff. Vladimir Tarasenko was able to net 3 shots on goal, was able to get one in. Alexander Barkov had 2 shots on goal as well. Same for Brandon Montour, 3 shots on goal. Panthers were letting it fly, and it paid off in the third, man. It paid off in the third. So best of luck to the Oilers. Hopefully they can send it to a game, game 5 minimum then if they win. I mean, I just want to see more games. If anything, I don't want to see sweeps. That's not what you want to see in the championship finals. I understand the Panthers are better, but you know what? I don't really care who wins. So good job to Florida. I did kind of want the Oilers to win, though. Nothing personal against the Panthers. I just choose the Oilers. It's just kind of fun to pick the underdog team. Unless you're the Mavericks. Screw the Mavericks. I'm happy you're losing. I cheered for you when you had Dirk Nowitzki. I'm not cheering for you. And you have Luka Doncic. That's all we got for there. And speaking of Luka Doncic, speaking of all these international players, another league, if you will, another entertainment industry is going international this weekend. And that is right. WWE is having another PLE, which I found out stands for a, what is it? A professional live event or professional live event, I think is the official term for it. And they head to Scotland. They're in Glasgow, Scotland for this event at the OVO Hydro Arena. And the promotional poster, of course, features the Scottish man himself, Drew McIntyre. I don't know if it's going to be the main event, but on this card, Drew McIntyre takes on Damian Priest for the World Heavyweight Championship. And last year at Clash of the Castle in Wales, he lost to Roman Reigns. Now Roman's gone. Damian Priest is the only one here. Drew McIntyre is looking to get some revenge and win the belt. I understand they're both heels, but it's such an interesting angle. I don't know what's going to happen. We're kind of seeing the Judgment Day break up, if you will. Finn Balor, Dirty Dominic Mysterio, and JD McDonagh are all barred from ringside for this matchup. So hopefully Drew McIntyre gets it done. The pop is going to be insane if he wins. It's already going to be insane with him entering, fighting, if you will. I'm excited to see what happens. I got to ride with Drew McIntyre. That's got to be my predictions. Drew McIntyre all day. I'm here for it. I'm excited. And honestly, best of luck. I just want to see a good match. I'll probably watch the highlights. I probably won't actually watch the whole thing. I'm going to be busy Saturday. I'm hanging out with some of my buddies. We're going mini golfing, going to a comedy club. It's going to be a fun time. Going to be a really fun time. Also going down on Clash at the Castle, Scotland. A singles match for the WWE Women's Championship as Bayley, your current champion, who won the belt at WrestleMania, takes on Piper Niven. Piper Niven, I believe, is Scottish, English. She's some form of something. I mean, Bayley's going to squash her. She's taking on, what's-her-face, Queen Nia Jax at SummerSlam. So, yeah. There's no way Piper Niven wins here. Plus, she's kind of irrelevant, so you got that. Also going down on this event, just five matches. That's it. Triple H loves his five-match format. Sami Zayn takes on Chad Gable in a singles match for the Intercontinental Championship. And I'm kind of torn on the angle here. You know, Chad Gable's in this group called the Alpha Academy. It's kind of what he's in. And it's with Otis, Akira Tozawa, and Maxine Dupri. And it kind of feels like that group's breaking up. But also, I don't see this group and the Judgment Day both breaking up. So you're either going to see the Judgment Day implode on this card or Alpha Academy. I personally would love to see Chad Gable win the Intercontinental Championship. Sami Zayn, nothing against him. I just think it could use a switch up with Chad Gable. And then you kind of have to assess, you know, how many champions are you going to have that are heels and how many are you going to have that are faces? And I mean, Drew McIntyre or Damian Priest, they're both heels. Bayley's a face. We're going to get to the women's tag match in a second. I think Chad Gable taking this belt would just not work with a bunch of heels. So I think it does stay with Sami Zayn. I do think that, you know, if Chad Gable wins, it would be absolutely electric. So we'll be rooting for him, but our official prediction will be Sami Zayn to retain. Kind of rhymes, actually. Also going down on here, you just jammed a bunch of women's tag matches on here. Triple threat match for the WWE Women's Tag Team Championship as Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill, who are on absolute fire right now, take on Alba Fire and Isla Dawn and the team of Shayna Baszler and Zoe Stark. I don't know who any of those women are except Shayna Baszler, former MMA fighter. Loved her on NXT back like 5 years ago. But yeah, Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill are going to retain. Good for the women's tag division, getting on all these pay-per-views. Why can't Logan Paul fight on some of these? He's the United States champion. He doesn't even fight on any of these cards. Kind of a joke, if you ask me. Don't be hating on me, but kind of a joke, in my opinion. So there's that. And if I'm doing all my stuff right, that means Drew McIntyre would have been the only man to win a belt. So honestly, we might change our pick to Chad Gable. Now that I'm thinking, I'm going to change my pick to Chad Gable. I'd rather see Chad Gable beat Sami Zayn. And we get to what could be the main event. I really hope it's not. It should be Drew McIntyre versus Damian Priest. But your undisputed WWE champion, Cody Rhodes, takes on AJ Styles in an I Quit match. And don't get me wrong, since WrestleMania, I mean, we can even go past WrestleMania, every Cody Rhodes match has been great. Him versus AJ Styles at Backlash France, amazing. Him versus Logan Paul at King and Queen of the Ring, amazing. But it's pretty obvious what's going to happen. He's going to beat AJ Styles here. AJ Styles is probably going to go away for a while. That's just how it works. That's just how it works. No shockers. Nothing unexpected is going to happen. You're going to get a great match. AJ Styles is going to quit, and Cody Rhodes is going to retain. I hate to burst any bubbles, you know, but there's no excitement factor here. That's why I don't think it should be the main event. I think Bayley, that match was predictable. I think the Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill winning is predictable. What it really comes down to is Damian Priest or Drew McIntyre going to win the World Heavyweight Championship, and is Sami Zayn or Chad Gable going to win? So I think there is your main event and co-main event right there. Damian Priest and Drew McIntyre should be the main. Cody Rhodes and AJ Styles can also be the first match of the evening, but the only issue is they kind of want to get Cody Rhodes across as the guy in UFC, the John Cena, the Rock, the Stone Cold, the Brock Lesnar, the guy. And not having him in the main event kind of doesn't set that tone. I do think they should have an exception here, but who knows? We will have to see what happens. We'll have to see what happens. I am excited, though. I am excited. Not really going to watch it, but it's there. It's there. I'll tell you what I did watch, though, ladies and gentlemen, and that is UFC Louisville. It went down. It happened. It happened almost a week ago. But nonetheless, we still do have to do our recap. We have to go over all the action that went down. So we got 14 fights to go through. Let's not waste any time because we got a lot of talking to get ahead of us. So I do want to point out this one thing about UFC Louisville, and that is it started out rough. Okay, these prelims were rough. Not just rough because I went 0-5 to kick off the card, but because the first six fights were all boring decisions. Let me just tell you that. No excitement through our first six fights. And pretty much any fight that didn't not go the distance was the only good fight of the evening. So every fight that had a finish were the only good fights of the evening. So we kicked off the night. Pooja Tomar, Rayana Dos Santos. And I thought Rayana Dos Santos did enough to get it done. It was competitive. Not much happened in this woman's strawweight matchup. Let me tell you that. Not much happened. But the judging was so whack. I mean, this was clearly a 29-28 or 30-27 for Pooja Tomar. And Matt Jones scores it 30-27 for Rayana Dos Santos. I mean, for Pooja Tomar, which it shouldn't have been. Kind of a joke if you ask me. I guess, you know, Pooja had more strikes, 95-84. Rayana went 0-3 on takedowns, but not much happened here. And I forgot they were trying to break Pooja Tomar, who's an Indian female, into the market. They really were getting across. The first female Indian to ever win a UFC fight. They were really getting that across. So good job to Pooja Tomar. You know, I'm not really going to hate because I predicted it wrong. I could care less about either of these women. But Pooja Tomar, 30 years old, 9-4 now, gets her first UFC win. Was a split decision. You know, isn't the best debut, but good stuff for her. As for Rayana Dos Santos, she does fall, if you want to call it falling, to 14-8. She's now 0-2 in the UFC, both split decisions. She also lost on Dana's Contender Series. I don't know how long she's going to be around, but not too much action in this one. Sad that I didn't predict it correctly. That's all I can say. All I can say. We kept it moving with our second fight of the evening as Cody Stamann took on Taylor Lapalusa. Son of a gun. You know, I told you guys this was either going to be the grappler's going to win or the striker. Taylor Lapalusa got it done. So props to Taylor, though. Props to Taylor, though. He got the win here. Taylor outstruck him 100 significant strikes to 59. Cody Stamann goes 1-6 on takedowns for 3 minutes and 24 seconds of control time. So not the greatest performance, but he got it done. He got a win. Outstruck him in every single round. 30-27 across the board. Cody Stamann, tough loss, man. Tough loss. Now on a 2-fight losing streak, both decisions. Kind of unfortunate. Kind of unfortunate. He'll truck along. We'll see how he does. But Taylor Lapalusa now, 20-4 record, 3-1 in his last four in the UFC in total. You know, since his low return, he's 2-1, so that's not too shabby. And he's getting the wins going. See how it goes. But you know, Taylor Lapalusa is 32, Cody Stamann's 34. We'll see how they both go. But yeah, not too much really speak on here. I really think Taylor Lapalusa will be taking on one of the other two men that won on this card in the bantamweight division. We'll mention them in just a second. But good stuff. Good stuff there. After that, we went to a women's strawweight matchup where Denise Gomez took on Edward Mora. And Edward Mora, who was undefeated 10-0, decided to lose her first professional bout to Denise Gomez in yet another split decision. Unreal. Them decisions just screwing me over. To start the whole card, just screwing me over left and right. left, right, and center, as they want to call it. Left, right, and center. I was predicting matchups wrong. Denise Gomez outstruck her 50 significant strikes to 18. Edward Mora goes 5 of 26 on takedowns. That's right. She attempted 26 takedowns in this fight. 9 in round 1, 9 in round 2, and 8 in round 3. She was able to land 5. But, I mean, come on. When you defend 21 takedowns, that'll get you the W. That'll get you the W. Edward Mora, sex to see you lose. You're now 10-1. It's unfortunate. 1-1 now in the UFC. But don't knock yourself. Denise Gomez, she's tough. She's talented. And her only loss in the last freaking 2 years is to Angela Hill, who's a top 10 woman strawweight. Nothing too exciting here. I think Denise Gomez versus Pooja Tamar is the right move. And then you can do Edward Mora versus Randa Dos Santos. The fights just kind of write themselves. Same thing goes for this next matchup. Bantamweight division, Daniel Marcos, John Costanda. It's not often that I predict a undefeated fighter to not win. In the case of Edward Mora, she lost. And we thought she'd win. And for this one, I had to pick John Costanda. I had to pick Sexy Mexi John Costanda. That's his nickname. As he took on the undefeated 15-0 Daniel Marcos. But Daniel Marcos improves to 16-0. The man from Peru gets it done. The striking department, 98 significant strikes to 60. Defends 4 takedown attempts of 5 total. And had 1 knockdown in the final round. Got better as the fight progressed. Daniel Marcos, he's legit. I think him versus Taylor Lapluse would be an excellent matchup, as you can see. For John Castaneda, just unfortunate. 2-fight losing streak is snapped. He's kind of getting up in there in age. He's 32. He's from Minneapolis, though, so we'll continue to root for John Castaneda as long as he's in the UFC. But Daniel Marcos takes this one. Props to Daniel Marcos. 4 fights in the UFC, 1 no contest, 3 wins. Good stuff. Good stuff for Daniel Marcos. He's talking about the rankings, though. He's not on your, despite being 16-0, he is not ready for the rankings. Do not send this man to the rankings. I actually swear that that'll just not make sense. After that, another split decision, another boring fight. This time we're in the women's flyweight division. As Andre Lee took on Montana De La Rosa, we predicted it wrong again. Unreal. Montana De La Rosa gets the W. 29-28 is going all sorts of ways. And I think it was just the grappling that really got it done here. Andrea Lee, 75 significant strikes to 70, 115 total strikes to 88. But Montana De La Rosa, 3 of 6 on takedowns. I guess that's what it takes to really get it done. I mean, Montana De La Rosa, she was able to land 2 takedowns in the third, outstruck her by 2 in the second, after getting outstruck by 13 in the first. I just think that was kind of the deciding factors to get the decision win. So Montana De La Rosa improves to 13-9. She snaps the 3-fight losing streak, so she'll remain in the UFC with that. But as for Andrea Lee, 13-10, 5 straight losses, all decisions. Goodbye, Andrea Lee. No excitement for either of these women. And Montana De La Rosa is 29, so I mean, she's not completely out of it. Just needs to stop going to decision. That'll get started going. And finally, the 6-fight in, we finally predicted a correct fight, and we predicted the correct method as Brad Katona, the 2-time Ultimate Fighter winner, finally gets a win. Holy cow, 16-3 record now. First win since August of last year. Thank goodness. Thank goodness. He uses his grappling to beat Jesse Butler. 3 of 3 on takedowns for 10 minutes and 50 seconds of control time. And I mean, the final round, it was fought on the feet, and he outstruck Jesse Butler 45-21. But the first 2 rounds, just shooting takedowns. No defense from Jesse Butler. Brad Katona in his bag. Happy to see it. As for Jesse Butler, 0-2 in the UFC. This guy is not UFC caliber. No, I'm not saying I'm UFC caliber, but sorry, Jesse Butler, you are not UFC caliber. However, Brad Katona is. Brad Katona clearly is. And I think him versus Daniel Marcos, John Castaneda, Taylor Lapluse, Cody Stamen, any of those fights make sense to me. I mean, good stuff. Happy to see it. We move on. And keeping it rolling, as the best thing of the night happened in our 7th fight of the night, our second-to-last prelim, as Carlos Prates, you know, we thought it'd be a round 2 knockout. Carlos said, no, Zachary, we're getting it done in round number 1, as he knocks out the homophobic Charles Radke in round number 1. Of course, Charles Radke, infamous for calling the fans the F word, the F-A-G word, if you will, after both of his wins. Pretty hilarious in front of live crowds, but Carlos Prates was like, no, man, no. Carlos Prates getting his 14th knockout, his 17th career finish. He's now on a 9-fight win streak. Carlos the Nightmare Prates, absolutely dominant. Absolutely dominant. 2-0 now in the UFC, both performance of the night knockouts. And both in this year, 2024, two great knockouts. And he, you know, this was pretty competitive, the whole fight. And then the final last 15 seconds, he lands a nasty, nasty body knee. Nasty knee to the body. It definitely shattered some ribs. Might have shattered his sternum. I mean, it was brutal. Carlos Prates hit a walk-off. He literally hit him. Charles Radke fell, and Carlos didn't even think about following up. Turned away. How about you get 50K bonus? And they told him, this is a UFC fighter, by the way. It looks so healthy. Looks shredded. Okay, has to cut weight. Has to be healthy around. They told him he won a 50 grand performance bonus when he's smoking a cigarette on a patio. I mean, Carlos Prates, what are you doing? 30 years old, from Brazil. Yeah. Yeah, he's that guy. He's that guy. And you know what? In the welterweight division, you can easily jump up. I mean, look at Ikram Alkhacarov for a fact. He was supposed to be fighting a jobber in the co-main event this upcoming weekend, and now he's fighting Robert Whittaker in a sold-out Saudi Arabian arena. So a lot can transpire in a short amount of time. Carlos Prates, one of my favorite unranked fighters. And after that, we got to the final prelim of the night, and son of a gun, Thiago Moises let me down. Gosh darn it. Ludwig Klein beats him by unanimous decision, 22-4 record down for Ludwig Klein. He's also on a six-fight unbeaten streak, 5 wins and 1 draw in his last 6. This sucked. This sucked as a Thiago Moises fan. Thiago is now win-loss since 2023, and just didn't have it. Just didn't have it. Thiago Moises, Ludwig Klein's better. Ludwig Klein's just better. Lands a knockdown in rounds 1 and 2 to 3. 2 knockdowns for Ludwig Klein. More significant strikes, 56-24. More total strikes, 86-25. Thiago Moises goes 0-8 on takedowns. And then in round 2, Ludwig was like, oh, I can take him down. And just landed 1 takedown. I mean, so Ludwig Klein, absolutely amazing performance, dominated the whole fight. Impressive, impressive stuff. Sucks that he's a Thiago Moises supporter, but I'm not a Ludwig Klein hater. You know, it was 50-50. I rode with Thiago. It didn't pay off. But Ludwig now in the lightweight division, I don't know if I want to give him a ranked opponent yet, but he's been looking impressive. He's been putting it together, been looking dominant. I think I'm going to give him number 14th ranked Rafael Dos Anjos or number 13th ranked Jalen Turner. Really like that Jalen Turner fight for him. Jalen Turner needs a pick-me-up fight. I think that's perfect. I think that's perfect right there. I say you make it. I say you do it. And that was the prelims. Best moment of the prelims, Carlos Prates, knee knockout. And we did not get the card started with a bang. The main card did not get started with a bang as Michael Beza, who I rode with. I rode with Michael Beza in the welterweight division. I thought he could get it done, and he just couldn't. He just couldn't. Both of these guys don't even look UFC caliber, but especially not Michael Beza. Michael Beza looked atrocious tonight. I forgot why this guy got cut from the UFC in the first place. He's now on a 4-fight losing streak. Absolutely atrocious. Punali Soriano, though, finally getting his first win since 2022, as he just grapples him to death. I mean, 230-25 scorecards across the board. 7 total significant strikes landed for Michael Beza in this whole fight. 5 in round 1, 1 in round 2, 1 in round 3. And the control time, 11 minutes for Punahele Soriano. 10-8 him in round 2 and 3. I mean, just took him down, beat on him. Fight could have been stopped at many moments. This was abysmal. This was abysmal. Punahele Soriano, good win for the kid. Good freaking win. But just boring. Just kind of a boring card. Not card, I should say. Just a boring fight right there. But hey, Miguel Beza, enjoy never coming to the UFC again. No offense, man. No offense. Come on the podcast anytime. I'm sorry. I'm a hater. Can't help it. With that, ladies and gentlemen, we went on one of the best 4-fight runs that I've ever seen. This is one of the best main cards on a fight night I've ever seen. And before you ask, yes, this is the best fight night of the year. When I go and do my rankings as of right now, heading into the third week of June, this is the best fight night of the year. And we got it going here. Zach Reese. Zach Reese, of course, he had been slammed TKO'd in his last matchup. Embarrassed. His first professional defeat, he is slammed by Cody Brundage on his head and he gets knocked out. Embarrassing. How does he follow that up? How about a 20-second knockout of Julian Marquez? I mean, come on, Zachary. He's 30 years old from Texas. His 5th career knockout, 7th career finish, and 7 career wins. I mean, he just went forward against Julian Marquez, punching. Julian's moving backwards, clips him with an uppercut. Night-night for Julian Marquez. Couple follow-up punches in that 20-second span, and it was over. Excellent, excellent bounce back win for Zach Reese. And I loved it. I absolutely loved it. It had me hyped. It had me going. And that's how you bounce back. That's how you bounce back, ladies and gentlemen. Zach Reese, young, new on the scene in the MMA world, especially in the UFC. But hey, in the middleweight division, a lot of options for you. A lot of options. And getting some highlight reel knockouts. He also got 50K performance bonus. We love to see it. Absolutely loved it, Zach Reese. I'm a fan. I picked him in all 3 of his matchups. One of those was on the Contender Series. But in his 2 UFC fights, I've rode with him. 20-second knockout. Looking good. After that, I mean, we just knew that Bruno Ferreira was going to get a round one knockout over Dustin Stolfus, you know, and he did not disappoint. He did not disappoint in the slightest as Bruno Ferreira gets his 9th career knockout, 12th career finish, as he spinning back elbow drops Dustin Stolfus. I mean, ouch. Dustin Stolfus said he broke so many bones in his eye, in his orbital face. I mean, it was ridiculous. And Dustin landed a takedown. Okay, I was a little worried for Bruno. He got taken down, but he was able to get back up, get to his feet, survive some submission attempts, and just Dustin looked lost on the feet. Dustin Stolfus looked lost on the feet. And of his 6 losses now, he's been finished in 4 of them. He's been knocked out now twice in his last 3 fights. What can I say? Bruno Ferreira in his bag. 2-fight winning streak now. Both 50K performance bonuses. Both in 2024. Both coming with under 10 seconds left in round number 1. You cannot be lacking when you're fighting Bruno Ferreira. Love this kid. Coming on the scene. He's fun. He's feisty. Dustin Stolfus, go back to Pennsylvania, buddy. Go back to Pennsylvania. And after that, we kept the action rolling as the 19-year-old, he's 2 years younger than me, Raul Rosas Jr., was back in action. What'd the kid do? He went and got his 6th career submission, 8th career finish, as he runs through Ricky Tercios. All right, runs through Ricky Tercios. Little 2-fight winning streak now, 9-1. He's looking good. Ricky Tercios sucks. Ricky Tercios just sucks. Raul did his typical, only went for takedowns. 2-4 on takedowns in round 1, 3 minutes 40 seconds. You know, Ricky was able to reverse one of them. There was that. Round 2, Raul goes to touch gloves. Ricky goes F you and throws a kick. Raul's like, okay. Takes him down, submits him with a rear naked choke. It was so satisfying. Ricky Tercios is an absolute bum. What an absolute bum. 13-4 record now. He's been win-loss since the start of his career. He's not UFC caliber. Raul Rosas Jr., you get it done. And that was exciting, too. It was absolutely exciting seeing Raul Rosas Jr. get it done. Another 50K performance bonus. And these two are supposed to fight back in Mexico City. So happy they got to see this one. Raul Rosas Jr. getting the win. And I love it. I love it, Raul. I'm a fan of yours. I'm a fan. Don't know what's next for him in the bantamweight division. Looking at the card, I mean, Cody Stamann seems kind of high for him. John Castaneda seems kind of high. Jesse Butler could be a fight for him. Who knows? After that, ladies and gentlemen, we got to our co-main event of the UFC Louisville card. And that is right. The man, the myth, the legend, Dominic Reyes, did it, guys. He freaking did it after 4 long years of losing. Terrible decision against John Jones. Getting knocked out by Jan Blachowicz. Getting knocked out by Jiří Procházka. Getting knocked out by Ryan Spann. Dominic Reyes is back. Gets his 8th career knockout. A 2-minute TKO of Dustin Jacoby. Dustin did not know what hit him. He started exchanging with Reyes. Looked like he had him against the cage. Then Reyes clipped him. Jacoby went down. He then hit him again. He went down again. And finally, one more punch. Jacoby fell backwards. The ref had seen enough. And Dominic Reyes is back in action. Now ranked number 13 in the UFC rankings. And we thought he'd do it by decision. And Dominic said, Zach, hold your horses. I'm getting a 2-minute knockout. Yes, I loved it, Dominic. I absolutely loved it. And it just felt good. It was such a feel-good moment. They didn't give him a 50K performance bonus. How about that? Why wouldn't you not give him a 50K performance bonus? They give out 4 before him, so I understand that's 200K right there. But great win for Dominic. It felt good. I mean, I'm sorry, Dustin Jacoby. You're 36. It was bound to happen. This is the 4th time he's been finished in his career. Dominic loved to see it. What's next for the guy, though? I mean, Dominic Reyes. I mean, you got number 12-ranked Bogdan Guskov. You got number 10-ranked Anthony Smith. You got 9-ranked Volkan Ozdemir. You got Johnny Walker, Alonzo Menifield. Unlimited options for Dominic Reyes. I'm just happy to know that he's gotten a win and a finish, too. His first finish since 2019. That's a good point to make. And then, you know what? It's kind of a quick movement into the main event, but the main event happened. The main event happened as Nazarudin Imavov took on Jerry Cannonier. And unfortunately to us fans, we got a very bad early stoppage. A very bad early stoppage. Now, don't get me wrong. This main event was nothing special. Up to this point, I mean, it had been pretty boring. Pretty boring. Jerry Cannonier won round one. He then got outstruck the last two. He was getting outstruck in round four, but it was competitive. It was competitive. Significant strikes, 82-64 in favor of Nazarudin. Total strikes, 106-102 in favor of Nazarudin. 2 of 3 on takedowns for Nazarudin. 1 of 1 for Jerry Cannonier. Jerry Cannonier actually had 6 minutes and 18 seconds control time to Nazarudin's 1 minute and 10 seconds. And it was kind of back and forth. I mean, round 3 might have gone to Jared very close. But then, you know, Nazarudin, he clipped him. He clipped him, and Jared was a little wobbly. He was kind of going back and forth, still staying on his feet. He was staying in the action. And Jason Herzog just must have seen something we didn't. Stopped the fight early. And Jared still had it in him. Jared still had it in him. But, you know, this goes down as Nazarudin Imavov's 6th career knockout, 10th career finish. Nazarudin Imavov is now on a 2-fight winning streak. Very nice. 2-fight winning streak. And is now the number 4-ranked middleweight in the world. That just does not seem real to me. I don't understand how Nazarudin Imavov just jumped Brendan Allen, who's been on like a 7- or 8-fight win streak. It seems kind of funky to me. But, you know what? Good for you, Nazarudin. Good for you. Early stoppage, though, even Herzog admitted it. It's unfortunate, but that little Vince McMahon, it's what's best for business, getting some new blood in there. And Cannonier is 40. I don't know much he has left in him, but that does snap a little 2-fight winning streak for him, which sucks to see. Sucks to see. But yeah, Nazarudin Imavov now ranked number 4. Cannonier now ranked number 5. I mean, Cannonier's only been finished like 3 times in his career. I mean, maybe even 4, but this one doesn't really count. I think they could rematch. I think they could go their separate ways. We'll have to see what happens. Of course, we now know number 3-ranked Robert Whittaker has a new opponent. Number 1-ranked Sean Strickland, though, he doesn't have a fight. You could do Nazarudin Sean rematch. They fought in January of 2023. As for Cannonier, I think the Brendan Allen fight's there. A fight with Paulo Costa's there. You could even give him Hamzat Chimaev or Kyle Barallo. Unlimited options for any of these guys. UFC Louisville was fun. It was fun watching it at a bar with some of my buddies. But other than that, not too much, nothing too special. The main event really put a damper on how beautiful this evening was going to turn out. I'm not going to hate, though. UFC Louisville, it happened. It went down. It gets a, I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10. A lot of good finishes. Seeing Dominic Reyes, Raul Rosas Jr., Carlos Prates, Zach Reese winning. It really brought a smile to my face. And honestly, good for Nazarudin Imavov. It's not Nazarudin's fault the ref stepped in early. Okay, so don't knock Nazarudin for that. He was doing his job. Plus, he had Cannonier wobbled. He might have really poured it on. He might have gotten the finish. There's that. I don't know how soon they're going to be coming back to Kentucky. So, Louisville, treasure this moment. And congratulations to all the fighters who got a 50K bonus. I'd love to see that. We'd love to see the money coming in. Before we talk about our UFC Vegas 93 predictions, our little preview for the card, I think it's a good time to go over our 10 new things from Discussing Film. Of course, every episode now we go on the Discussing Film Twitter, talk about 10 new things in pop culture, TV shows, movies, video games, all sorts of fun stuff with actors and actresses. Let's get right on into it. The first thing we have up for this episode, I mean, The Boys Season 4 kicked off officially. The new news right here is that Homelander will be taking part in a Reddit Q&A tomorrow. It's so funny how they promote this show. The marketing team is absolutely genius. I watched episode 1. It was very interesting. I still have to watch episodes 2 and 3. My thoughts after episode 1 for The Boys Season 4. Jeffrey Dean Morgan's character barely in it. Billy the Butcher, kind of turning for the good, not kind of going with his own intentions, thinking of the others in the, I should probably say spoiler warning before anyone's listening to this. Huey's dad had a stroke, he's in the hospital, we'll see what happens with him. Homelander killed, who is his name, Mother's Milk's ex-wife, her husband was, or her boyfriend, Homelander killed him in a very weird fashion. He actually had Black Noir, the Deep, and A-Train beat them to death with baseball bats. Very violent, very gory. And apparently Frenchie is bisexual or gay. He had like a relationship with a man. It was very weird. I don't know if that's from the comics or something. I wasn't necessarily rocking with it, but I mean, it is Pride Month. You do you, Frenchie. I still like this character in the show, even if he's, I won't even get touch on that. But let's see what else transpired. Homelander menacing as ever, getting evil. He's finding some new soups for the team. I still have to watch episodes 2 and 3. We'll see what happens. I've heard it's not as good as the other seasons, but I mean, it's hard to judge from one episode. Well, we'll have to keep watching to see what goes down. Number 2 for the day, House of the Dragon has already been renewed for season 3. Season 2, of course, the first episode drops this Sunday, June 16th. I am very excited to watch that, but season 3 already coming out, which means I can already figure that we are going to see a cliffhanger at the end of season 2, which is kind of unfortunate to know already in advance, but it's kind of exciting that we're going to get a third season of a Game of Thrones-style Song of Ice and Fire, you know, the world at Westeros, George R. R. Martin's universe, coming back into, you know, another series. I'm happy to see it. I enjoyed the first season. Season 2 should be even better. Derek Connolly is writing the script for Transformers times G.I. Joe crossover movie. He directed the Jurassic World movie. I still cannot believe they're crossing over the Transformers and G.I. Joe universes. I don't even know what to make of that. I don't know if I'm going to go see it, but the Jurassic World movie is one of my favorite dinosaur movies, probably the best one, the one with Chris Pratt, not its sequels, and probably not the sequels to the original Jurassic Park, but Jurassic World, very good movie, so I trust Jared Connolly for writing the script. Very good stuff there. Other stuff, number 3 or number 4, Emily Blunt is in talks to star in Steven Spielberg's UFO film, which comes out May 15th in 2026. Steven Spielberg, one of the best directors of all time, very legendary. And Emily Blunt, great actress. I like a lot of the movies she's in. I still have to see The Fall Guy with her and Ryan Gosling. But if she's going to be the lead, I'm here for it. And I love UFOs. I love all that stuff. So Steven Spielberg, I put my trust in you to give a good show. That's what we're going to hope for right there. Number five. What's a good thing to touch on? There's a lot of stuff they bring up. Idris Elba and Rebecca Ferguson are eyeing to star in Catherine Bigelow's next film. The film will follow how the White House reacts in real time to ballistic missiles headed for America. Idris Elba and Rebecca Ferguson, both very good. I mean, Idris Elba, he's in essentially everything. Rebecca Ferguson, of course, the mother of Paul Atreides in Dune. Oh my gosh, I still have to rewatch Dune Part 2. But I love Idris Elba. Any movies he's in, I just immediately love more. And Rebecca Ferguson, she played her role very good. I couldn't tell if I liked her or didn't like her in Dune Part 2. So very fascinating stuff there. That's what we got. Number 6, directors and writers that have been involved in Blade include Bassam Tarek, Jan Demang, Stacey Asekofer, Beau DeMeo, Michael Starberry, Nick Pozzolito, Michael Green, and Eric Pearson. And when you hear all those names, they might not sound familiar. I want you all to know they are star-studded writers and directors. This Blade movie cannot get off the ground. Mahershala Ali still labeled the play Blade, but it's just this, I don't know what's going on. There's absolutely disasters over in the MCU. Recently, Jan Demang was set to not direct the film anymore. And the writer for Black Widow, Eric Pearson, is now writing the script. And Black Widow sucked. I hated that movie. It was so mediocre, so I do worry for this Blade movie. I'm a little scared, but we'll have to see. Number 7, Pete Docter says they've been searching for ideas for a Monsters, Inc. sequel, but are yet to see anything enough to start working on a script. You know, they made the sequel to the movie, which is technically a prequel. They've, of course, made some Disney Plus shows, but I think we leave Monsters, Inc. where it's at. It's a cult classic in the Pixar universe. It's great. We don't need one of those situations like Kung Fu Panda, where we're putting out too many movies, and by the third and fourth, they're getting kind of bad. So there's that, but Monsters, Inc., one of the better movies. Number 8, Inside Out 2 has debuted with a 90% on Rotten Tomatoes. I don't know who they're asking. They must be asking children and mothers, because I would definitely not rate this movie a 90%. It does not look interesting to me. It is also not for me. I am definitely not going to watch a movie about a 13-year-old girl dealing with her emotions. I could care less about that. Plus, the first film was so mid, so mediocre, not for me. I think this is a very biased opinion. Let me first say that right now as a biased opinion, but it's still how I kind of feel about the show. But hey, if you're going to go watch it, and if it's for you, enjoy it. Have a jolly good time. Number 9, kind of some sadder news to touch on here. NBA legend Jerry West has passed away at the age of 86. His silhouette was, of course, the inspiration for the logo for the NBA. So many championships with the Lakers. Legendary, just an amazing player. Amazing player, and 86 years old. He lived a great life. He was so involved with the team, did so much for the league, broke so many barriers, set so many records. I mean, it was impressive to see. It was very impressive to see, and may Jerry West rest peacefully. May Jesus watch over his soul, and his legacy is going to live on. I mean, the logo is Jerry West. I think we all know, like, oh, his silhouette is what's used now. That logo is Jerry West, and that's how his legacy will live on. And the final thing we're going to touch on, going back to the first thing we touched on, is that The Boys will officially be ending after season 5. So season 4 will be the penultimate season, I think it is, and then the final is the ultimate or something. I don't know what the official terms are, but The Boys season 5, you know, Amazon Prime, they said, hey, we don't want this show to go on forever like other shows where it gets to a point where it's like, this isn't good, this isn't what it originally was, so... Season 5, the final season, they're going to go out with a bang. It was originally written for 5 seasons. Of course, the comic books are ended, so there's no new source material to work with. So, I mean, appreciate season 4, as season 5 will probably be coming out in a year or two. I'm very interested to see what all happens with The Boys. Will Homelander die? Will Huey get his revenge? Will Billy Butcher die? A lot of things to wrap up when it comes to The Boys. But that's all we got for discussing film. That's all we're going to touch on in the pop culture world. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we get into the main event of this episode. Of course, UFC Vegas 93, the 93rd Apex card in UFC history. Wow. Felt like forever that 2020, we were watching the first one, and little did we know, we'd still be doing Apex cards in freaking 2024. But it is what it is. I like a lot of these fighters on this card. Some I don't really care about. The main event, I am very intrigued. Tatsuo Taira, the number 13th ranked flyweight, gets the chance of a lifetime as he takes on the number 5 ranked Alex Perez. We got like 13 fights to get through. Might be 12 after the Ikram Alkhasarov pullout. We'll see what happens. Let's not waste any time. Let's get to predicting. Kicking off our prelims, we go to the men's, if I can find it, the men's featherweight division as Melquizel Costa takes on Shailene Nurdambeek. And by the way, with the loss of Ikram Alkhasarov versus his opponent was Antonio Troccoli, by the way, his second opponent. So, I mean, we were bound to see a fight cancellation at some point there. You know, we don't really know what this card is going to look like finalized. So the 12 fights we're going to talk about, they could shuffle around in any order, but we'll of course have our predictions for the whole card. So Melquizel Costa takes on Shailene Nurdambeek. Melquizel Milk Coffee Costa and Shailene Wolverine Nurdambeek. I like that nickname. I like that nickname, the Wolverine. Melquizel Costa is 20-7 professionally. Shailene Nurdambeek 39-11. Wow, he's had 50 professional fights. 5'10 to 5'8 gives Melquizel 2 inches in height, and he is 2 inches in reach. 71 inches to 69. A little southpaw stance with that left hand for Melquizel. Orthodox for Shailene Nurdambeek. Let's start with Shailene, the Wolverine. I mean, ridiculous 39-11 record. The 30-year-old is from China and has a grappling style. Of those 39 wins, 19 KOs and 10 submissions. Now, of those 11 losses, he's been finished 9 times. Of those 11 losses, he's been finished 9 times. But 3-2 in the UFC. He is coming off a loss to Steve Garcia in April of 2023. Got knocked out cold 30 seconds into round 2. But before that, I mean, he had a round 1 knockout of Derek Minor. Decision wins over TJ Brown and Sean Soriano. He did lose his debut to Josh Cuiabo back in 2021. But all we can really use to judge is that Steve Garcia fight. He dropped Steve in round 1. Unfortunately, got caught in round 2. Shailene, he's got the experience, he's only 30, and he's from China. I know they're trying to break into the Chinese market. We'll have to see what transpires. His opponent, Marcos Alcasta, 27 years old from Brazil. He actually has alpoacia. Or something. He's like something where his skin pigmentation is different over his entire body. It is very fascinating. Gives him a very distinct look, if you will. Of his 20 wins, 7 KOs, and 6 submissions. Of his 7 losses, he's been finished 4 times. And ironically enough, the last man he lost to was Steve Garcia, who knocked him out in round 2. I want you to guess who else got knocked out in round 2. His opponent, Shaley Nerdenbeek. So Steve Garcia knocks out 2 guys, and they both end up fighting each other. Pretty funny. He's a 1-2 in the UFC, losses to Thiago Moises and Steve Garcia, as I just mentioned. His lone win is over Austin Lingo. You know, he could be going win-loss, but I like what Shaley Nerdenbeek puts down. He's kind of exciting, kind of brings the pressure. So we're going to go with Shaylene Nerdenbeek. Plus, it's just fun to pick this guy. 50 wins, 30 years old, from China. That's who we're going with. What method? It's kind of tougher. I don't really know. It's always fun to pick decision fights on the prelims. So we're just going to say a little decision win for Shaylene Nerdenbeek. I just think skill-wise and experience-wise, he trumps Marcos Alcasta. Plus, Marcos hasn't done necessarily anything too impressive in his 3 UFC fights. There's that. Keeping us moving, this is one of the more interesting women's matchups you're going to see, as Josephine Thunder Knutson takes on Julia the Dragon Polastri. How about those nicknames? That's fun. Josephine Knutson, 7-0. Julia Polastri, 12-3. 5'3" to 5'2" gives Josephine 1 inch in height. As for the reach, 3 inches go to Julia Polastri, 63 inches to 60. Both women stand in the orthodox stance. Let's start with Julia Polastri. Julia Polastri, 12-3, as I mentioned. She's 26 years old from Brazil. Of her 12 wins, 4 KOs and 3 submissions. She's currently on a 4-fight win streak. This fight was supposed to go down in March, and now it's finally going down. She originally fought on Dana White's Contender Series back in 2021 and lost to Jasmine Jasu Davicius, who's currently ranked number 15 in the women's flyweight division. Since then, went on a little 3-fight win streak, came back on Dana White's Contender Series last September, got a round 2 submission, she got a contract, she's coming in on 4-fight win streak. We'll see how she does. Very good stuff. Her opponent, Josephine Knutson. How about that? Josephine Knutson, 28 years old from Sweden. She has a Muay Thai background, and she is 7-0. Now, of those 7 wins, she has 1 KO and 6 decisions. So, yeah. She fought on road to the UFC, landed 4 takedowns in 2020 for a total of 6 minutes of control time, and got the win. She then fought in Dana White's Contender Series, had more of a striking battle, 1-for-3 on takedowns, 7 minutes of control time. Then in her debut, she took on Marnik Mann in September and got 11 minutes of control time on 3 takedowns. She loves her Muay Thai. She loves to get it done. I think Julia Polastri is going to get out-grappled in this one, and you're going to see another decision, this time going to Josephine Knutson. Plus, if it's between Brazil and Sweden, I'm riding with Sweden. I think I'm part Swedish. I might be part Swedish. Don't quote me on that. I could share my ancestry DNA test. Should we do that on a future episode? We might have to do that. Get into our third fight of the evening. We jump back to the men's featherweight division as Jekka Sergei takes on Weston Wilson. Jekka Sergei, this guy's fun. I like this guy. 14-3, Weston Wilson, 16-9. A crazy 6'1" to 5'8" gives Weston 5 inches in 5 inches in height. Oh my goodness. Also has 4 inches in reach, 73 inches to 69. Wowza. Orthodox stance for Jekka, southpaw for Weston Wilson. Let's start off with Jekka Sergei though, okay? 29 years old from Indonesia. Of his 14 wins, he's got 9 KOs and 4 subs. So 13 of 14 wins, he has finished, which we just love to see. Of that, 9 KOs, 4 submissions, lovely. He's only gotten the distance once, and he won that fight. So there's that. Of his losses, though, he's been finished in all those, so there's that. He, of course, won on the road to the UFC. He lost his debut in February of 2023, came back in November, and got a 1:31 knockout. That's how you bounce back. A little performance bonus to go with that. Jekka Sergei is deadly. His knockouts are fun, they're spicy, and he puts on a show from the Indonesian market. His opponent, Weston Wilson, 35 years old from South Carolina. Of his 16 wins, 100% finish rate, 5 KOs, 11 submissions, he's only ever been the distance twice, and he's lost both of those. So far, he's had 2 UFC fights, and he's been knocked out in round 1 in both of them. So, Weston Wilson, 35 years old, 16-9, no idea how you're in the UFC, taking on a young up-and-comer who knocks people out, guys, do I even have to say it? Give me Jekasera guy, round one knockout. And this is very interesting. Another interesting point I should make here is Jekasera guy is actually moving up in weight. Fought at bantamweight usually, so we'll see if that hurts him or helps him. Round one knockout, though, incoming is my prediction for Jekasera guy. I like him. He's fun. And Weston Wilson looks like a skinny white guy that just does not belong in the octagon. So get him out of there, Jekka. Bring that Indonesian power. Weston Wilson, South Carolina. Cool state, though. So I'll give you that. Good hometown. Next up, we head to the women's flyweight division as Carly Judice takes on Gabriela Fernandez. Carly Crispy Judice, her nickname. 3-1. She's only had 4 professional bouts. Takes on Gabriela Gabby Fernandez, 8-3. 5'7 to 5'6 gives Carly 1 inch in height. She also has 2 inches in reach, 68 inches is 66. Both women are in the southpaw stance. How interesting. Both women throw the left hand. You rarely see that. Let's kick it off with Carly Judice, 25 years old from Missouri. Of her 3 wins, she has 3 knockouts. Out of her 1 loss, it was a split decision on Daniel's Contender Series in September. I don't know if Carly has a special background of some kind, but I mean, 25 years old, this is going to be her 5th professional bout. That is certainly a call for concern when it comes to your durability, but you know what? She landed 168 significant strikes on Dana White's Contender Series. Only career loss was a split decision. That's not too bad. We'll see how she does against Gabriela Gabby Fernandez. Gabriela, 30 years old from Brazil. Of her 8 wins, she has 2 KOs and 3 subs. All of her losses have been by decision. And she's currently 0-2 in the UFC. Decision losses to Jasmine Jasu Davicius and Teresa Bleda. Both of those last year came from grappling. 2 UFC fights, she's been taken down 7 times. Luckily, both these women like to strike, it seems. I'm gonna lean towards Gabriela because of the, how do I put it, just the fact she's had more fights, she's fought more experienced competitors. So we're gonna give Gabriela the win here. I hate to say it, I don't really see a finish coming in this one. It would be interesting. I'll always take a finish in a woman's fight. Get them over quicker, if you know what I mean. Obviously, I'm joking. But there's that. Gabriela Fernandez, I wish you luck. I think she might be an underdog, too. So we could maybe make some money if we ended up betting. We don't bet, though. After that, we move into the men's welterweight division as Josh Bushido Quinlan takes on Adam Fugit. Josh Quinlan, 6-2 with 1 no contest. Adam Fugit, 9-4. 6'1 to 6 foot gives Adam 1 inch in height, and he has a notable 5 inches in reach, 77 inches is 72. Southpaw stance for Adam, orthodox for Josh Quinlan. Josh Quinlan, actually we'll start with Adam Fugit. Adam Fugit, no nickname for Adam Fugit, sadly, doesn't get a nickname. 35 years old from Oregon, of his 9 victories, 5 KOs and 3 submissions, and of his 4 losses, he's been finished 3 times. He's 1-2 in the UFC, he's been knocked out by Michael Morales in round 3, he's knocked out Yusaku Kinoshita in round 1, and he's been submitted by Mike Mallett in round number 2. Both of his losses are to high-level guys. Yusaku Kinoshita, obviously not on either of the other opponents' levels. But nonetheless, Adam Fugit, always down, always game. Who really knows what he specializes in? Probably grappling. He's going to be going for that grappling as he takes on Josh Bushido Quinlan. Josh Quinlan fighting out of Nevada, 31 years old. Of his 6 victories, 4 KOs and 2 subs, 100% finish rate. Debuted in 2022, 2-minute knockout of Jason Witt. Since that, though, 2023, lost the decision to Trey Waters. Back in February of this year, got knocked out by Danny Barlow in round 3. We'll see how Josh does, if he can bounce back, but maybe the end for Josh Quinlan. I don't think so. I'm going to put some faith in the kid. Adam Fugit, in all the fights I've seen, just does not remind me of a guy who's down to scrap like Josh Quinlan is. Josh Quinlan puts himself in situations that sometimes he shouldn't. I think he's going to get a round 2 knockout. Round 2 knockout for Josh Quinlan to spice it up, to kind of bring some intensity, if you will, to the matchup. But we'll see what occurs. We will see what occurs. From welterweight to flyweight we go for this next matchup. We have 3 flyweight matchups still to go on this card. Scratch that. 4 flyweight matchups. The flyweights are on display in tonight's card. Kicking us off for our flyweight action, Jimmy Flick takes on Nate Maniz. And this one's going to be very interesting as Nate Maniz is actually coming down from bantamweight for this matchup. Jimmy the Brick Flick, 17-7. Nate Mayhem Maniz, 15-3. 5'10 to 5'7 gives Nate 3 inches in height, and he has 4 inches in reach, 72 inches and 68. Both men, of course, are in the orthodox stance. Let's start off with Nate Maness, 32 years old from Kentucky. Six KOs and three submissions make up his 15 wins, and he's coming off a round one knockout back in October. Got a performance bonus for it. His only losses in the UFC are to Umar Nurmagomedov and Tagir Limbekov. I mean, come on, two Russian guys who can grapple. That may be his weakness. Nate Maness loves to strike. He's also submitted Luke Sanders. He's knocked out Tony Gravely. This guy's as game as they come, and he's coming down to flyweight to bring the Thunder. So, Nate Maness loves a strike, loves to get it done in that department. His opponent, quite the contrary, Jimmy Flick. This is absolutely crazy to me. Jimmy Flick is 33 years old, from Oklahoma. Of his 17 wins, he has 15 submissions. Oh my goodness. He just, submission, you know what? He's just amazing in the submission department. Now, how is he in the striking department, you may ask? Okay, I want you to know. Of his seven losses, six of them he's been knocked out in. So, I mean, here's a guy. All he can do is grapple. His weakness is striking. He's taking on Nate Maness, whose weakness is grappling. Strength is striking. Clash of styles doesn't get better than that. Jimmy Flick, I mean, comes into the UFC in 2020. Gets a flying triangle choke. Performance of the night to get it going, his career, and then takes 3 years off, retires, unretires, comes back in 2023, gets knocked out twice. Came back, though, in January, submitted Malcolm Gordon in round two. You could say he's back. I don't think he's back. I do not think Nate Maness is going to get submitted by Jimmy Flick. I think Jimmy Flick's inability to stop submissions is going to be, I mean, his ability to stop getting knocked out is his weakness. And on my sheet, I actually just highlighted Jimmy Flick. The last time we accidentally highlighted the guy we weren't going to pick, it was Islam Makhachev versus Dustin Poirier. So since I accidentally just highlighted Jimmy Flick, I think we're going to ride with him. I was going to predict Nate Maness, but I think my body was telling me you need to pick Jimmy Flick. So Jimmy Flick, I guess, is our prediction. He's going to submit Nate Maness in round number two. I mean, wow, that was unexpected. I was prepared to go with Nate Maness, and my hands said otherwise. So a little surprise you get here on the Surprise Jab Podcast. Keeping us rolling in the men's flyweight division for our next matchup, we finally get some ranked opponents. Jeez, just jeez. Number 12 ranked Tagir Limbekov takes on the unranked Joshua Van. Joshua the Fearless Van. This is where things start to get a little spicy. Tagir Limbekov, 15-2. Joshua the Fearless Van, 10-1. 5'7-5'5. Gives Tagir 2 inches in height. He also has 5 inches in reach, 70 inches to 65. Southpaw stance for Tagir Limbekov. Orthodox for Joshua the Fearless Van. Let's start with number 12 ranked Tagir Ulimbekov, 32 years old, of course, from Dagestan, Russia. Of his 15 wins, 9 submissions. Of his 2 losses, they both were by decision. One of those to Tim Elliott in 2022. Other than that, he's on a 2-fight win streak, submitted Nate Maness in November 2022, and last December submitted Cody Durden in round number 1. He was in his bag in that fight. 5 submission attempts, 1 knockdown, 2 takedowns. Just dismantled Cody Durden. Tagir Limbekov looking to be in great form. And this is a big test for Joshua Van. I mean, Tagir Limbekov, he's training with killers. He's a killer himself, and he's, what's his age? I mean, 32 to 22, a 10-year age gap. It'll be interesting to see how Joshua Van deals with that discrepancy in the age and the experience. But Joshua Van is 22 years old, born in Myanmar, now lives and trains in Houston. Of his 10 wins, he has, I lost in my notes, 6 KOs and 2 submissions. He's on an 8-fight win streak. His 1 loss, he was submitted. This dude has taken 3 straight short-nose fights. So this is his 4th straight short-nose fight. He was, of course, supposed to take on Tetsuro Taira, and Alex Perez was supposed to take on Tagir Limbekov. The UFC was like, wait, why should we have 2 up-and-comers fight each other when we can have them fight veterans and try and get them in the rankings? I like the UFC's thought process there. Takes a short-nose fight against Ilaga Sumalagov, wins by split decision. In November, takes a short-nose fight against Kevin Boros, wins by unanimous decision. In January this year, took a short-nose fight against Felipe Bunez, knocked him out in round number 2. A little TKO action. Should have given him 50K for that one. But Joshua Van, he's fun. He's exciting. I want Joshua Van to win. I'm going to be honest. I think Tagir Limbekov is too skilled for Joshua Van. It's nothing personal. It is nothing personal at all. And I like Joshua Van. But Tagir Limbekov, he's got the height, he's got the reach, he's got the experience, and I think he's unfortunately going to get a round 2 submission. I don't want it to happen. I want to see Joshua Van knock him out, but in our predictions, we're going to take Tagir Limbekov. just because of his advantages in every department. The only thing that Joshua Van can rely on is his faith in himself to perform well. So maybe if he can do that, channel some inside him, he can get it done. But that's not what's going down in our predictions book. Moving on to the bantamweight division for our next bout, as Brady Hystand takes on Garrett Armfield. Brady Bam Bam Hystand is 8-2. Garrett Armfield is 10-3. 5'8 to 5'6 gives Brady 2 inches in height, and he is 1 inch in reach, 71 inches to 70. And both men are, of course, in the orthodox stance. Let's start with Garrett Armfield. Garrett Armfield, 27 years old, from Florida. Of his victories, 6 KOs and 2 submissions is not too shabby. Of his 3 losses, though, he has been submitted twice, which is unfortunate. Currently 2-1 in the UFC on a 2-fight winning streak. Knocked out Toshima Kazama in August, and earlier this year beat Brad Katona shockingly in front of his home crowd in Canada. His only loss is to David Onama in 2022 so far in the UFC, which is pretty good, and I won't lie, Garrett Armfield surprised me. And that win over Brad Katona. Brad Katona, we just saw him fight this past weekend. He is good. He's won the Ultimate Fighter twice. So Garrett Armfield, clearly kind of talented. His opponent, Brady Hystad, the runner-up on the Ultimate Fighter back in season 29, I want to say it was, 28, one of those two seasons. The 25-year-old is from Washington and has 3 KOs and 2 submissions in his 8 wins. He's only ever been TKO'd once. Other than that, he's on a 2-fight winning streak, lost a split decision to Ricky Turcios, which is embarrassing, but that was 3 years ago. Beat Fern Garcia in 2022 by unanimous decision, and he actually got a round 3 TKO back in April of 2023 over Batagarno Dana. Brady, I hate to say it, I don't think his experience lines up with that of Garrett Armfield. I also don't think he's been fighting anywhere near the level of Garrett Armfield's opponents he's had to deal with in the UFC so far. So we're going to take Garrett Armfield to get it done, and we're feeling kind of spicy, if I'm being honest. I'm actually going to say a round 1 TKO for Garrett Armfield. I think he gets a surprise knockdown, surprise little TKO, and I love it. I absolutely love it. Garrett Armfield will ride with you. 4 more fights on the evening, ladies and gentlemen, and we go to our second-to-last flyweight matchup, and this one is crazy. Asu Zulfikar Almabayev takes on Jose Lobo Solitario Johnson. Asu Almabayev, 19-2. Jose Johnson, 16-8. Asu Almabayev is 5'4". Jose Johnson is 6 feet tall. A 6-foot tall, 125-pound man, that is just not natural. That Jose Johnson, that is just not natural. I'm sorry. I am sorry. But that is insane. An 8-inch height gap. That's crazy. 6 inches in the reach department, 71 inches to 65. Both men are in the orthodox stance. But let's start with Asu Zulfikar Almabayev, because this man, 30 years old from Kyrgyzstan, is on a 15-fight win streak, for goodness sakes. Of his 19 wins, 3 KOs and 9 submissions. Debuted in August of last year and got a round 2 performance of the night submission of Ode Osborne. He then fought in March and landed 9 takedowns for 9.5 minutes of control time over CJ Vergara. Asu Almabayev, grappling's great, submission game's great, and he likes to slay giants. Let's see how he does with this 6-foot giant. The 29-year-old from Flint, Michigan, Jose Johnson, of his 16 wins, 8 KOs, and 3 submissions. Now, of his 8 losses, he has been submitted 4 times, including in August of last year, he got twistered by Dabob Blackshear. Very, very embarrassing. He did follow that up with a submission over Chad Anhellinger in November, but like I said, Jose's coming down to flyweight. For the first time, he was fighting at bantamweight. Now he's at flyweight. I think that weight cut's going to hurt him. I don't think he has good takedown defense. I think Asu Almabayev is going to get his hands on this little 6-foot tall boy from Flint, Michigan, and the Kazakhstan boy is going to get a submission. That's right, Asu Almabayev all day. We're actually going to be very ambiguous here. I don't think that's the correct word, but give Asu a round 1 submission. A little rear naked choke. I think he's just going to capitalize on that. But if Jose Johnson surprises him and knocks him out with a quick punch or something, TKOs him, honestly, would not be surprised. But we ride with Asu Almabayev, 19-2, could move his win streak to 16 fights. That'd be crazy. Third to last fight of the evening, Douglas Silva de Andrade takes on Miles Chapo Johns in the men's bantamweight division. Douglas Silva de Andrade, 29-5 with 1 no contest. Miles Johns, 14-2 with 1 no contest. Both men are 5'7", Douglas has 2 inches in reach, 68 inches to 66, and both men are in the orthodox stance for their position. Let's start with Miles Chapo Johns. Miles is 30 years old from Dallas. Of his 14 wins, 4 KOs and 2 submissions, which does give him 8 decisions, which isn't necessarily too pretty. Miles Johns has been in the UFC since 2019, fought twice in the Contender Series. His debut in 2020, he got flying knee by Mario Bautista, followed it up with 2 round 3 performance of the night knockouts over Kevin Natividad and Anderson Dos Santos, then got arm triangled by John Castaneda in 2022, ended 22 with a decision win over Vince Morales, had a loss overturned against Dan Argueta by a decision, and then followed up that with a win in March of this year over Cody Gibson in a boring decision. Miles Johns, he's hit or miss. He loves his decisions, but his nickname's Chapo, so I do kind of like that about him. His opponent, Douglas Silva de Andrade, 38 years old as a bantamweight. It's pretty crazy. From Brazil, of his 29 victories, he has 20 knockouts and 2 submissions. That is absolutely wild. That's absolutely wild. Douglas Silva de Andrade coming off a win over Cody Stammen back in May of last year. And before that, I mean, he had lost to Said Nurmagomedov, lost to Yaron Murphy, lost to Petr Yan. He's only ever lost to killers in the UFC. Though I do think that benefits him in this matchup against Miles Johns. But this is an Apex card. Anything can happen. We'll have to see. I'm a little torn. I'm very torn on this fight, actually, because Douglas Silva de Andrade is 38. There have been signs in his last, you know, 2 fights of him fading, kind of. But I think it's kind of fun to ride with a 38-year-old who's kind of on his way out. He's trying to fight this guy, Miles Johns, who does nothing exciting. Let's give Douglas Silva de Andrade the nod in this one. Have you been predicting a lot of finishes in a row? So we'll say a little decision action here. That's what we're going to ride with. Good luck to Douglas Silva de Andrade, 38 years old. Come on. And then what right now is the co-main event, I guarantee this changes because I don't even know who these guys are. Timmy Kwamba takes on Lucas Almeida in the men's featherweight division. I mean, 200 guys, not much is known about either of these gentlemen. Timmy Twilight Kwamba, 8-2. Lucas Almeida, 14-3. 5'11 to 5'9 gives Lucas 2 inches in height. And both men have a 71-inch reach and are in the orthodox stance, which is pretty, pretty neat. Let's start with Lucas Almeida. The 33-year-old is from Brazil, and of his 14 wins, he has 9 KOs and 5 subs. That's right, 100% finish rate. Unfortunately for Lucas, of his 3 losses, he's been finished in 2 of them. And those last 2 fights that he's had in 2023, he was finished in. So, submitted by Pat Sabatini, knocked out by Andre Feely. It's been a rough go. It's been a rough go for Lucas Almeida. I mean, the Mike Trezano win in June of 2022 was nice. Won a fight of the night for that, but I mean, nothing's really looked up for Lucas Almeida. 1-2 in the UFC. We'll see how he does in this one as he takes on the Dana White's Contender Series alum, Timmy Kwamba. Timmy Kwamba, 25 years old, from Nevada. Of his 8 wins, he's had 4 KOs. And of his 2 losses, 1 was a decision, and 1 he got submitted. That actual decision loss was his last fight out in February of this year against Balaji Okie. Close split decision, Balaji did land 27 more significant strikes, which gave him the win. Timmy, I don't really know what to expect of you. I do know Lucas Almeida is game for whatever. Lucas has more knockouts than subs. Timmy Kwamba has a baby face. We're going to ride with the Brazilian in this one, Lucas Almeida. And honestly, we're going to say he knocks Timmy out. We're going to say a little round two knockout. Round two knockout on the Apex card. That's what we're going to go with. I'm sorry, Timmy. I'm sorry. I also, my cousin has a friend named Timmy who's kind of weird. And that's kind of what you remind me of, Timmy Kwamba. So, Lucas Almeida, you definitely need a win here in the featherweight division. We'll see what happens. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, with that, we get to our main event of the evening, the final thing we're going to talk about here on the podcast. And one of my favorite fighters is fighting in action as the number 13th ranked, the Japanese star Tatsuro Taera, takes on the number 5 ranked Alex Perez. Let's go to the tail of the tape. Alex Perez, of course, the number 5 flyweight in the world, the former title challenger, 25-8. Tatsuro Taera, the young buck, the up-and-comer, 15-0. 5'7 to 5'6 gives Tatsuro 1 inch in height, and he has a very helpful 5-inch reach advantage, 70 inches to 65, and both men stand in the orthodox position. Let's start off with the number 5 ranked Alex Perez. Of course, fought Deiveson Figueiredo for the flyweight championship back in 2020, lost. Then fought former champion Alexander Pantoa in 2022, lost. fought in March of this year to Mohamed Mokaev, lost, and then shockingly took a short notice fight against Mathias Nicolau in April. He last fought April 27th and got one of the best knockouts of the year, a round 2 knockout of Mathias Nicolau. Incredible. Alex Perez looking to turn the tables again and beat the young up-and-comer. The 32-year-old is from California and has 6 KOs and 7 submissions of his 25 wins. Of his 8 losses, though, he's been submitted 5 times. I find that very fascinating. He's been submitted 5 times. And this guy, I mean, a lot of round 1 finishes. I mean, round 1. I mean, of 6 of his fights in the UFC have ended in round 1. He's won 4 of them, lost 2 of them. He's coming in with a little momentum. He's also fought more recently. But he just has one thing that Tatsuro Taera does not. And I don't even think that's anything. There's nothing to ride with Alex Perez on this fight. We're riding with the young up-and-comer Tatsuro Taera, the 24-year-old. He's only 2 years older than me, from Japan. Of his 15 wins, 4 KOs, and 7 submissions, he's on absolute roll. 5-0 in the UFC. 5-0 in the UFC. 2 performance of the night submissions, coming off a round two TKO in December over Carlos Hernandez. He's been fighting bums. He's been fighting no one worthy. All right. He's going from unranked guys to the number 5 ranked guy in the world. That's pretty crazy. But have no fear. Tatsuro Taera is here. He's bringing the Japanese market with him, and he's getting that round 3 submission for Tatsuro Taera. I think Alex Perez kind of pushes him a bit. That's kind of been the theme this year. And he gets a little round 3 submission. That's right. Of course I'm picking Tatsuro Taera. I like the guy. I'm a fan of Tatsuro Taera. He's fun, okay? And he has bleach blonde hair. He dyes it. Kind of got some black or brown hint to it. He's fun. And I just truly believe skill-wise, his grappling is much, much better. He's also got a reach, which is very helpful. He just cannot get clipped. And the good thing, though, for Alex Perez is he has a 44%, 82% takedown defense, which is very, very helpful. Of his 5 fights, though, Tatsuro Taera averages 2.4 submission attempts per 15 minutes. I do think that will kind of affect Alex Perez's performance, but Tatsuro Taera, I'm putting my faith in you to get it done. That's who we're riding with in the main event of UFC Vegas 93. With that, ladies and gentlemen, that's all we got. And honestly, doing this in an hour and a half, not too shabby. I had a couple things I cut out, which we might talk about throughout the year. Of course, the Ultimate Fighter is going down. There's always ESPN asking new questions about divisions. I was thinking even we could do on some episodes us re-ranking some UFC divisions. A lot of fun stuff ahead. We'll be checking next time, episode 99. We're going to have a lot to talk about, recapping this card, dropping our predictions for UFC Saudi Arabia. We'll see what happens, guys, but make it the best week of your life before we speak next. Have a great weekend. Whenever you're listening to this, just know that you are the man, you are the woman, and you are going to do great things. How about that little motivation on the Surprise Jet Podcast? I'll catch you next time, folks. Have a good one.